Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Save a little more this month. Chime checking accounts have features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe and no monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/goals24. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of Millennial Money. Today, we got to talk about the everything crash. Because guess what, guys? Stocks have not quite done well today. It seems like Tesla's down 12%. Oh, what? That's crazy. 12%. Why? So many companies have also begun reporting earnings. The earnings aren't even that bad. But as soon as they report, boom, they just drop in the after hours. It's absolutely crazy. So we're going to be talking about those changes, some of the changes with the scare of the Federal Reserve, everything going on in the markets today. And Kevin, your incredible portfolio, we have to address that. You doubled your money in the last year.
Thank you. Well, crazy. Where do we want to start? Not on that.
maybe we should start on that. You know what? Okay. You know what? No. We got to save some of that for later. Let's talk about, we should start with Tesla. I think everyone wants to know what's going on with Tesla. And Kevin, I know in your portfolio too, you have quite a lot of Tesla. So a 12% drop is substantial.
Yeah. Yeah. So obviously, Tesla, not super happy with, Elon, selling some shares. The expectation was that he would have had to have done so anyway to sell options. And it's kind of funny how he sort of led Twitter to make the decision on that, because in theory, he could have just borrowed. I mean, he borrows all the time against his stocks to finance his lifestyle, parties, or whatever. And, you know, you don't necessarily have to sell. But so he gave some opportunity to the Tesla community, or maybe not just the Tesla community, because we pretty much think Elizabeth Warren was sitting there troll voting on Elon's poll when he asked if he should sell 10% of his Tesla stake to pay taxes, which obviously he's going to be paying a big amount of taxes on. But the expectation is the other half that he's keeping, he'll be able to pay off his taxes owed on other options. So it's like net by the end of the year. He's not actually expected to be out really any Tesla shares, since he's getting options and selling to cover taxes on them. If anything, he'll have a larger position. And folks are now speculating, what is Elon going to do with the rest of the money if he's got some money left over? So people are wondering, oh, is he going to buy back into Tesla or SpaceX, or is he going to just put it into Bitcoin and diversify, or is it SHIB or Doge?
I have a speculation on why Tesla was down huge. I think it's because Rivian IPOs tomorrow. And I think all that trader money, you know, these traders want in Rivian tomorrow. A lot of people feel like that baby's going to pump like it's nobody's business. And a lot of the money that's pumped into Tesla very recently has been trader money. So that's my speculation on why Tesla was down huge today.
Ooh, so outside of the fundamental of having a larger sort of supply of sold stocks, the argument that perhaps, hey, if the momentum's over for Tesla, no matter what the rationale was for it, whether it was Elon or not, if the momentum's over for that, what's the next hot puppy? And maybe that's Rivian. Well, what's your take on the valuation for Rivian?
Oh, man, I haven't got to look in depth yet, but I would guess it's probably overvalued significantly. And I will assume it will pump tomorrow and it will be even more overvalued significantly. So as with most EV stocks, but Yeah, I want no piece of that pie, but I know traders do, man. It's going to be the excitement tomorrow. I don't know what the exact they're supposed to price at. Did you get to see, Kevin, as far as share price goes?
77 is what I have. Am I 77, 78, something like that?
What valuation does that give them?
Also somewhere in the high 70 billions. I'll find out for sure.
Maybe it was like 72. Don't be surprised if it shoots over 100 billion either. So
I learned my lesson. Coinbase, so I don't think I'm going to do that again.
But Andre, just the fact that you're not buying in though means it's going to moon tomorrow.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
As soon as if you bought it, the thing is going to tank.
But I would have to publicly announce it though. It doesn't affect it if I don't publicly say anything. The moment that I do, then it has the opposite effect.
Yeah.
Well, I think the thing is right now Tesla has not really had that much competition. I mean, a lot of the EV competition is. Competition really just an electric vehicle. So if you want to get from point A to point B on an electric charge, great. There's some good options out there. But I think really what Tesla has is the technology and the data. How is Rivian planning to compete on that front in terms of self-driving? Do you know, Kevin?
Well, I actually am working on a Rivian video that I have to finish tonight. And I have that section. I'll pull it up. Give me a second. I'll show you what they've got.
Okay.
Yeah, and Amazon, if I recall, has a pretty good size investment. Amazon 20. Owns what? Is it 20%?
I think it's 20% of Rivian.
Or wow. Does anybody know if they're selling anything tomorrow, Amazon specifically?
Ooh, that's a good question. If you wonder if there's a lockup for them, that'd be something to look at. But here's a Driver Plus system. So basically, level 2 safety, which level 2 is any time you have two inputs that are not from a human. So it could just be like steering and braking. Oh, boom, you're level 2. So really, they expect in the future, our platform, our platform's architecture will enable us to evolve and expand our Driver Plus offerings to support level 3 autonomy in the future. And so the vehicles will come with 11 cameras, 12 ultrasonic sensors, 5 radars, and a high precision GPS antenna.
Wow.
So, no autopilot, but the hardware is there, which the hardware, honestly, at this point is the cheap stuff to throw in.
Yeah, because I have a feeling at least once they have the basics down, they'd be able to learn pretty quickly depending on how many vehicles are on the road. Right. And if they take the Amazon approach, they're basically going to learn from what Tesla's doing and then just copy it.
What about the charging stations? How is that going to be competing with Tesla?
There's like a really section on that, too. I'll find it and I'll get back to you.
Yeah, I'm trying to find out. So Amazon invested a couple years ago with $700 million, if I recall. But I'm trying to see what valuation Rivian was at that time. Were they at like a $2.5 billion valuation or so?
They were super low back then. Yeah, Rivian. Wow. Rivian's invested $1.345 billion. I'm sorry, Amazon invested $1.345 billion into Rivian over the last 4 or 5 years. And they've invested in multiple different rounds. They've led multiple different rounds, and they even bought some bonds in July for about $490 million. So they're all in for like $1.8 billion into Rivian, and that's the reason this company has so much sex appeal right now, is because Amazon and Ford have invested in them.
Wow! Yeah, well, what a steal deal Amazon got in this whole situation.
They're getting a 10x, bro.
Yeah, so I mean, probability would be over 100 bill.
Yeah, so Kevin, are people investing in Amazon to capture some of the runoff of Rivian?
Because I doubt it.
Yeah.
Highly doubt that.
Why is that?
Because it's a $100 billion company that maybe they have $20 billion stake in. $20 billion divided by Amazon's market cap, which is what you're buying when you're buying a slice of that, is $1.8 trillion, right? So 0.02 divided by 1.81, you're getting, for every $100 you put into Amazon, $1.10 goes into Rivian via Amazon, right?
Right.
Got it. That's a great way of putting it.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't even realize, how powerful Amazon is in terms of how many brands they own, you know, outside of just Amazon, Amazon Web Services, obviously investments like Rivian, Whole Foods, Twitch, you know, I don't think a lot of people realize how powerful Amazon is. It's incredible, incredible, just beast. And I think Tesla, you know, a lot of people view Tesla as kind of like an upstart, where it's like all these startups inside one company. And so you're kind of getting like a holding company that's Tesla, but they can do all these things outside of that. And Kevin, have you seen the video? There was a gentleman that did a video, kind of went viral here on YouTube a couple weeks ago. And it was around Tesla launching a phone and that phone being connected to the Starlink platform and everything like that. Did you get the chance to see that?
Nope. Okay. Sounds interesting.
It is very interesting. And they go through, you know, why Tesla would do this and how it would compete against Apple. And man, it was pretty fascinating. And it got me to think, geez, man, that is a big opportunity. So, but yeah, that's Tesla for you. People want them to do everything. So,
yeah, that's true. But you know, they're talking about the Tesla air conditioner and all this. They got enough problems just trying to get a Tesla Cybertruck out. So, you know. But whatever.
Yeah.
Are you guys buying Rivian stock tomorrow?
I think I can get like $10,000 of pre-IPO shares at IPO price. Those might be worth like trading because oftentimes they purposely underprice the IPOs and they open up like 40-50% up and then just trade them, you know.
Right.
So yeah. Kevin, you'd be a seller of those shares at maybe what, 100, 110, or like midday?
Yeah, probably. I don't think I would hold the darn thing. I think I would wait for the crazy hype and speculation to go down a little bit, which you're gonna have at the start here, kind of like Coinbase. But yeah, at the beginning, you know, remember Coinbase was like the biggest, most hypey crypto IPO that we have ever seen. And it's no surprise that as crypto fell, it fell. And remember, they're going through this, and this happens. You IPO to all of this hype, the hype dies, and you kind of become a not sexy stock anymore. That's usually when you want to make your long-term investment. And then you grow with the company through the ups and downs after that. I think the worst time to buy is like right at the start, like IPO. I feel like you're just getting ripped off.
Yeah. Right. And you know, stocks are old news, guys. It's all about this right here.
Oh, God.
You know, like you know, why are you talking about stocks? Like,
I talked to Jeremy earlier today, you know, how do you invest in Bitcoin when we told him he'd be up like 50%?
Yep.
Well, but if you bought Voyager stock 2 weeks ago, Graham, you'd be up 100%. Actually, 100%.
Yeah, I bought at 12:30. In fairness,
okay. What did you buy some Voyager, Graham? Or you?
I did.
Okay, so you're doing
well. Well, I didn't. I didn't buy at 12. I think I bought. I didn't buy a lot. I put a small chunk in there at like 13 or 14. I'm just gonna hold it for a year and just see what happens. But I think a lot of these cryptocurrency companies, I think over the next few years, I'm hoping they would do well, but I'm putting in enough where I really just don't have to worry about it either way.
Well, yeah. If crypto does well, easily of course, acquired.
I feel could easily get acquired. Yeah, at this point.
Yeah,
but
no, that's a good point.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm talking to them for maybe like an equity deal or something because I don't know. I love their stock too, and I love the VGX tokens. I want to get the 20,000 to get that extra 1.5%. Yes.
There how much are those right now? Like $2 or something?
I think like $2 or $3, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you have to invest $60,000 in the Voyager token to get an extra 1.5%.
Yes.
What are the benefits of holding on to the token? Is it just you ride, you just hold the token?
So as Andre said, you get the extra 1.5%, and then you get what's called it's called crypto back rewards. And that's a confusing thing. Somebody really tried to explain that to me, but I'm not the smartest knife in the knife block, needless to say. So I had a little trouble understanding it. But essentially what they were saying is when you buy like Bitcoin or something like that, you get extra coming back to you. I'm not the best to explain this, so I'm not even going to try it. But it was ingenious stuff. Okay?
You're just like, money shows up in my account. I'm good with that.
Andre,
I'm going to see how that works.
No, I haven't read into the rewards thing yet. I just know the extra percent incentive, but I don't know the rewards back yet. Right. I'm reading it right now. Crypto back rewards for every trade you execute on the Voyager app, a smart order achieves what's called price movement, which means Voyager scours the market to fill your order, beats the quoted fill price in the app. Okay, you'll receive 2 to 3x the price improvement normally given to customers. Interesting. So I guess they give you less of a spread based on that. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Well, the spread's a ripoff.
So So yeah, this is what this gentleman says. He says, yes, your Navigator tier gives you 1.5% extra cash back on Bitcoin, Ethereum, USD. However, it gives you 3x crypto back rewards that people do not understand. This 3x crypto back rewards is huge. Here's an example. Typically, Coinbase, Voyager, BlockFi, etc. have some kind of fee or spread when you buy coins. Well, if the Voyager spread was $5 on a $100 transaction, that means you would get $95 of the coin. But with your 3x back rewards, you would get money back for every transaction to make the spread less. So that $5 fee might only be $2 because you get $3 in, you know, back, essentially. So, and that's paid out in the first and the 15th through VGX. And this applies to all transactions, meaning buys and sells.
This sounds like an ad.
I'm still trying to figure out how they're paying such high interest rates on their crypto. Like, I know they lend to institutions, but I don't understand why BlockFi and Coinbase and Gemini aren't able to compete with their interest rates. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I talked to Steven, their CEO, and he said that he has no plans to change the interest rates next year, which is a really bold thing to say. Like, I don't know how he's able to know that far ahead. So I don't know.
Yeah. One of the many black boxes around crypto, we call that.
So, did you guys see what is it? Evergrande coming back? That thing is like a zombie that just doesn't die. I don't know. I'm kind
of
scared of
what way is it coming back? I haven't followed it.
So originally we kind of looked at like exposure to the US market, right? We were like, well, how is the U.S. market exposed to Evergrande bonds? And it's very little. We're not really exposed. It's like 0.5% to the hedge funds. But that's not the real downside. Apparently, the real downside is they provide so much money in terms of loans to some of the smaller companies in China that if they fail, this could choke supply chains even more. And as we know, Papa Powell told us that supply chains are going to be an issue well into next year. And once we taper down all the way, and Kevin, you did a video about this, tapering down $15 billion a month for until what, like July 2022? Yeah. After July, in July of 2022, we will know if inflation is bad, if that's the narrative we can continue talking about. Because at that point, we shouldn't have such big, such a huge amount of inflation. But if the labor thing isn't fixed, if there's not enough people working, and if supply chains are still bad, which could be way worse because of Evergrande's collapse, then inflation could be a lot worse, even though the Fed's not really pumping money because supply chains might potentially be destroyed because of this Evergrande thing. Does that make sense? Businesses are just relying on them for loans. And so if Evergrande's not around anymore, I don't know. And obviously everything's made in China. So if we're not getting enough stuff made and shipped to us, that could be way worse. So by July, I would say Evergrande's going to be a much bigger factor than we think it is.
Ooh, and you said by when, Andre?
July 2022. So we're tapering $15 billion a month off of the $120 billion that we were doing at the peak, which takes us to July.
What? Can you clarify why you're making this connection between liquidity for supply and the Chinese real estate company?
Yeah, because they still provide loans to all the other small businesses, right? Around
Evergrande does.
I know, which does not necessarily relate to real estate. There, make sense?
I didn't know that Evergrande did loans. I thought they borrowed a crap load of money. But they have so many different companies. I personally don't know that much about the company. I know they've got a property management firm. I know they've got the electric vehicle firm. And then they've got the real estate division. Apparently you're saying they do lending as well?
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot of things that we're not told about the company. I just actually read a really great article about a private researcher who was just looking into this company. And he said that it's like factually already bankrupt and that it could potentially be a lot worse. So I don't
believe
know.
That. Yeah. But I also believe that, you know, a wafer manufacturer in China is going to find somebody else to give them a loan. They're not going to be relying on Evergrande to do that. I think China will even provide loans before something happens to
you might be right. Sure.
What
article you might be right. I'm looking for it right now.
All right.
I'll send it to you.
Jeremy, what do you think?
I think it's a mess that it's hard to get to the bottom of. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they were giving out loans and taking loans and loaning on the loans, for all I know. And, yeah, you know,
that's the thing. Yeah. They could be receiving loans so that they could loan it out to somebody right. else. So, right. if that loan defaults, then it trickles up. I wouldn't right. be. Listen, at this point, you could tell me anything with the company. I'd just be like, oh, yeah, that seems that makes right. I'm worried that a lot of those are already priced in. A lot of the fear that happened about a month and a half ago, a lot of people have already came to terms that something's probably not going to go well with that. U.S. companies have very little exposure. And even though I have a feeling it's probably going to be a very short-term blip that's mainly going to be isolated outside of the U.S.
I hope so.
I think.
Yeah, you know, something that freaks me out in the States, it's a new business model that's starting to take off. And I'd love to hear your perspective, Kevin, because I believe you own
Buy Now, Pay Later?
Yes, you knew I was going there. Wow. Yes. So what do you think about that? Do you think that's, you know, at risk at all? It's just, I don't know, man. It seems a little sketchy. Maybe it's because it's a new thing, but I'm a little skeptical.
Look, buy now, pay later is no more than the online iteration of layaway from like the 80s that people used to do, which I don't know. I've never done anything a layaway. But here's the reality. Bank of America says somewhere around 70% of the people using buy now, pay later services have already maxed their credit cards. So it's kind of like their last resort to get into more debt. I think it's not a good thing for consumers to get in the habit of using. I don't encourage it. I don't recommend it. I think it's a bad idea. I think you should only spend money when you have the money to spend. So from a financial point of view, I think it's bad. From a company and profitability point of view, I would be happy to invest in it while times are good. Probably don't want to be invested in the company in a market crash because they got lots of probably subprime loans they're carrying.
That's true. Yeah, no, that's exactly what I think. I'm like, man, if you know, the economy really went down in a major way, I'm just wondering, you know, I think that would be the last thing people would pay, right? They would pay almost everything before they pay off, you know, some TV they bought, you know, on whatever it is. So, yeah, what do you guys think about the middle class right now? And do you think the middle class is getting squeezed like nobody's business? Like you make 50K a year, 60K a year, rents are rising, gas prices are over $4 a gallon, I think, in most parts of the country. What do you guys just think about the state of the middle class in America with this, you know, I don't want to call it hyperinflation market, but this inflation market? Do you have any perspective on that?
You lost me at the I word.
Well, Kevin, let me ask you this. For buy now, pay later, what's the collateral that they're taking besides just appearing on a credit report?
That's it.
Yeah.
They're not coming to take your product back. Nobody's showing up your door taking your Peloton back.
You know, I remember I had the same complaint about the lending platforms like Lending Club and Prosper. And my biggest complaint was that these returns were great now. And it makes sense. I think it's a good business model, but I would be interested to see how that performs in a recession. And so far, it seems like overall, the returns are similar to the stock market, except you're tying up your money. So it's like not that much of an appeal. But I'm surprised they've held overall pretty well.
They have. Yeah, they recently started falling a little bit more thanks to the Venmo partnership with Amazon, because Venmo does have a form of pay in four, like make your buy something and pay it off in four payments. The Affirm integration is live. I should try to pull up an example, but it did reach a crazy intraday high of 176. It's down right now about 15% from that intraday high after that Venmo talk started coming around. So kind of interesting. It sold off a little bit here, but it's still up insanely. I mean, like, I bought this thing back at like $88 or something. It's still what, like 90% or something like that in 2 or 3 months. It's just the stock market's gone euphoric and like nutso. So you know, I sold a little bit to just kind of trim it a little bit, have a little bit of profits off of it. I don't know if I would do it again, but
I don't understand this concept, Kevin, of, you know, stock market's gone nutso. Do you really feel like it's gone nutso? Like, I feel like it's okay. I don't feel like it's off the charts or anything like that.
Well, I don't know if you're being sarcastic, because you make these videos all the time about how it's statistically very rich compared to S&P historic valuations.
I thought you were talking about, you know, very, very recently, because I mean, I'm looking at, like, I don't know, it seems like every earnings coming out, I'm seeing stock down 20%, 20%, 20%.
Oh, it's because PayPal, you're looking at Tattooed Chef.
Yeah.
Kevin.
So today and the last couple of days have been really interesting. And part of me wonders if it's because of the Fed's financial stability report that came out that really cast shade on younger investors who are over leveraged and using too many options and are taking too much risk and are pre-pricing in too many future cash flows. And so that really dampened earnings the last couple of days. I mean, you had a few companies that reported today that just had triple beats and they plummeted. I'm trying to pull up a couple of them, but it was nasty today.
There was Upstart. At least four or five stocks.
Yeah. Upstart was a triple beat. Revenue, bottom line, guidance, everything. Up, up, up. The thing fell 20%. Now, keep in mind, that thing has gone on this insane, like, euphoria run, which was stupid. Like, I thought it was very, very dumb. So it probably deserved it. But, you know, Coinbase missed. They fell 14%. Purple missed. They fell 22%. Poshmark, 25%. Yeah, I mean, these are some big reactions.
Yeah, vicious, man. Vicious, vicious. And I mean, other than the fact that you don't even have a fish tank in your house, Kevin, you know, I mean, it's vicious. Some of those falls in some of those stocks. I mean, my gosh,
you picking up everything.
You picking up any of these, Kevin?
Oh God, no.
Okay, nothing. Even purple.
Purple. Oh, now I sold purple a long time ago, like $32. The market right now is not, in my opinion, anywhere close to a fear-driven market. The last thing I bought was $1 million of Bitcoin on like Saturday. And I haven't really done anything since then. If anything, I just expect to sell a little bit more to trim some positions, maybe Etsy, Enphase, maybe some other things. Just to, I've got like $600K margin, pay that off. And just, you know, hey, if it falls, then I'll just rebuy the dip. If it runs, fine. I'll have a little cash on the side.
Where are you buying Bitcoin on?
Well, so I wanted to buy frantically on Saturday, so I kind of had to hurry. And so I had 550K of liquidity in Coinbase. That's my favorite place to buy is Coinbase Pro, because then I could transfer it to Voyager. The spread on Webull, horrible. Really, really bad. And so I didn't buy any on there, although I did once buy one Bitcoin on Webull. But anyway, and then the rest was actually on Robinhood, which Robinhood has the next best pricing. And if I'm just, you know, that other extra 500K, I'm really just buying it to speculate on it. I'm never going to put it off into like cold storage. I'm never going to put it on a hardware wallet. I'm just speculating on it. So I don't really care that's on Robinhood. It's easy enough to trade. And the fees are the best out of everything. The fees are the best on Robinhood for crypto.
Yeah. See, Kevin, this is the issue. You know, I want to go back to a statement you just made around the market is not fear driven at all, because that's a hard pill for a lot of folks to swallow, because they're looking at countless stocks down 60, 70, 80% from highs reached 9-10 months ago. And they're like, not fear driven. What does purple stock say? What is Upstart? What is, you know, go through these stocks. And I'm like, my gosh.
Well, I mean, like Upstart's like up 3x from a few months ago, right? So that's
okay.
Like,
so that might be one bad example, but everything else,
much. Yeah. Purple's like flat on the year now. But yeah, I mean, I think like look at some of the SPACs, look at like a Smile Direct, look at like Honest or whatever. I don't remember if I don't think Honest was an IP, was a SPAC, but some of the newer IPOs, even InsurTech, you're right. There are some sectors that are lagging. InsurTech is at the lowest it's been in the last year. Lemonade, Hippo, in my opinion, like I look at Owlet, the baby sock product, again, Smile Direct or some of these other companies.
Oatly.
Huge, I think huge Oatly discounts. Fell big. What's it?
Oatly? That was another big one.
I don't know what that is.
Oatly, that's the oat milk company that went public. I think it was over a $10 billion valuation. I think that one's down substantially, but I'm not 100% sure.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, I think there are some things that will always go through these sort of sectoral transitions where they're just going to suck until they don't. I mean, look at EV. EV was like euphoria between November, December, January, and the first part of February. Then it crashes in end of February, March, again in May. It stays in the toilet throughout the summer, kind of like crypto was in the toilet. And then it comes back. It just goes in cycles. I think sometimes we get caught in this trap of, oh, it's all got to move together. It doesn't have to. So that's kind of, I think, like right now, I think we're in a massive EV hype cycle. I think that's going to be really good for Rivian's IPO. I think they're timing it at the perfect time.
Yeah. So Andre, a question for you. How long do you think this current crypto cycle we're going through, which is a pretty positive one, Bitcoin just hit a new all-time high. I think Ethereum's right around all-time high. Do you think we're anywhere near a short-term, let's call it top, or we still got a lot of, you know, several months to run here?
Yeah, I've got a crazy theory that is kind of based on what Michael Saylor's been saying, which I think has a lot of validity to it. And basically,
gold going to zero?
Yeah, eventually. No. Basically, what he's saying is this year, we're going to have like another massive run up to maybe $100,000, $120,000, whatever it might be. And we could have any numerous amounts of trigger for us to get there, whether it's a spot ETF instead of the futures ETF. And some people are saying we're going to get the Ethereum futures ETF before we get a spot ETF of Bitcoin. Whatever it could be, maybe it's Tesla announcing that they're accepting Bitcoin again, right? Whatever it might be, it could trigger FOMO to $100,000. So we're going to ride it to like the end of this year, at which point, this is something Raul Paul brought up, which was great. A lot of the people in the hedge fund space, they need to take profits off the table by year end, just to lock in their profits, to take their fees. That's just something they have to do, take it off the balance sheet, right? So when that happens, the market's going to take a dive. And that's what's going to make people think that that's going to be the beginning of the end of the bull run, just like we had in 2017. People are going to be like, that's it. That's the end. We got $100,000. That's the sell-off.
Hey, so, Andre.
Hold on. All right, can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah. No.
All right. Was I breaking? Yeah. All right.
I was going to say like timing wise, because you didn't mention anything about timing. So I was just trying to figure out if you want to say anything around like this month or anything like that. So.
Yeah, no, you mean the run up to 100,000?
Yes.
Any time between now and the end of the year. Next 2 months. In the next 2 months, it's something's going to happen where it's going to trigger to some ridiculous, crazy FOMO. At which point, towards the end of the year, people are going to anticipate that we're going to fall and they're going to sell, they're going to front run it. Hedge fund people are going to lock in their profits. That's going to cause the price to go down. Again, retail investors, and you have to remember how many people started investing in Bitcoin this year. There were so many people that are not familiar with how Bitcoin cycles work. They're gonna start freaking out, thinking like, oh my God, this is a crash, I'm gonna sell out, right? But it's gonna be like a fake dip. So in January, when the price craters, or sometime in January, February, and the price goes down, I don't know by how much, that's when these hedge fund people are going to buy back in, because they have to put in their money. The profits that they locked in, they're going to have to put it somewhere. And because there's so much demand from retail to get into this stuff, they're going to invest their money into Bitcoin. And that's what's going to cause the next run to, and again, the valuation sounds ridiculous, but it's like they're predicting anywhere between $150,000 to $400,000 in the high end for Bitcoin. So it's going to be a fake dump by the end of this year, or sometime towards, you know, the beginning, maybe when the hedge fund managers have to lock in the profits, and then we're going to go on the crazy upside. So it's going to be like a fake out, essentially. That's the theory that people are thinking.
I just think that the longer Bitcoin is around, the more money is in it, the higher the price gets, the more stable it's going to be. So I would almost be shocked at this point if we see another 85% drop. Now it even seems like a 50% drop is substantial for Bitcoin. And I have a feeling if you think we'll see a 90% crash?
Not maybe 90, but I could see easily over 50, just because the whales in crypto understand how this game works and they coordinate with each other. They dump. Bitcoin loses 80%. People are shouting, this is the end of Bitcoin. That's when smart money buys back in. That's when we ride to whatever $400,000 by summer of 2022. That's when like it's going to be peak FOMO. That's kind of the play that I'm seeing that the narrative going towards. So play at your own risk is like, I guess the warning.
Wow.
That's a big statement. I mean,
we did have a drop from, I think it was like 66 to 29 at the lowest. It's about a 50 something percent drop, but I'm thinking once it gets above, I don't know, 100, 150, if it gets to that point, maybe we're not going to see as much volatility as we have in the past.
No, but listen, if we get super frothy to like 250, 300,000, it could easily go back down to 50,000.
But I think it also depends on how quickly it does that. Is it doing that within like a few months? Is it doing that over the course of years?
No, that's probably going to take weeks to go from that to 50 or 40 or wherever we're going. So anyway, it's just, there's going to be a huge fake out and then we're going to go to the moon. That's how if I could speculate, if I could guess and put in my 2 cents as far as the prediction.
So Jeremy, when are you buying Bitcoin?
Well, I technically own a very, very small amount. I just got it deposited into my account from Voyager, actually, because I have an affiliate link. So, which means the top has been reached in Bitcoin. Get out now while you can and get ready for that baby to tank. Andre's 65% coming. So the top is in, folks. Jeremy's got Bitcoin.
I can see people like Jeremy sell out because he gets scared. He's like, I knew this was a scam.
Oh god!
Smart money buys back in. What do you think, Kevin? Do you think that's going to happen? You think there's a chance of that happening?
Well, I would separate. Like, I would divide smart money. I would say that people who invest other people's money, a lot of the institutional investors, I think they tend to be sometimes a little bit later to the game. I think the people like the Michael Saylors, right? The OG kind of buy the dippers. They're the ones, like, I feel like that's kind of like your smart money of crypto. And then you kind of have like the smart old money. and I feel like they're slower. And the reason for that is a lot of that old smart money still has trouble convincing their clients why they're investing in crypto. And if Bitcoin just sold off 50%, I do not see a lot of money managers going, "Hey, investors, time to YOLO in and buy the dip and hodl." You know? Yep. So I think we have to segment, like, I mean, maybe like the new smart money people who are like pro crypto, those new institutional investors, they'll get it. They'll do that. But the old guard's going to have a problem. They'll come in later. I think retail could be a big driver of some of the buy the dipping, because they've been just so good about buying dips. It's crazy.
Well, I think the old smart money is going to be driven more so by retail demand, which is
pushing it. Okay.
Yes, which in this theory again should happen in the next 2 months or so. That's theoretically.
And, to push it up rather than push it down.
Right.
Yeah. Oh,
right.
Okay. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Sure. I mean, what you said about the spot ETF is going to be huge. I mean, you saw Bitcoin move 10, 15% on just the Bitcoin futures ETF, which was total bull crap. It's not even the underlying asset. It's lame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think trillions can flow into the market as soon as we get a spot ETF. And again, that could be the trigger. That could be the trigger to get us to 100 this year.
I could see that.
Yeah.
Wow.
I still think we're probably maybe, I don't know, six to 12 months away from getting an ETF. I think the SEC is so concerned about regulating payment for order flow and doing their investigation on that. I think it's going to be quite some time before they ever get around to like a proper Bitcoin ETF.
That could be true, but we don't need the spot ETF to get that FOMO triggered. It's just one of many catalysts, I would say.
Yes.
I'm not depending on it this year. I think you're right. It's not going to come this year.
Yeah. I think we're more likely to see Robinhood listing Shiba Inu.
So, which you said is more stable than Tesla this week.
Which is nuts. I've been watching some of these cryptocurrencies, and I'm surprised. I mean, now granted, a week and a half is not really long enough to to get a good sample size, but it's held steadier than Tesla for whatever that's worth.
I actually had my friend Pro. Do you guys remember Pro, the Dogecoin millionaire?
Heck yeah.
Yeah, he actually just YOLO'd $100,000 into a very speculative crypto, and I tried to convince him and talk him out of it, and he just wouldn't listen. He's like,
listen,
sweet, YOLO.
I'm convinced with him, you're never going to be able to convince him otherwise, because he proved everybody wrong. When he invested his life savings and maxed out his credit cards to invest in Dogecoin, and he was right. There is nothing that you could tell him that will convince him otherwise that he can't do that again. And so I'm really interested to see it. This will now I would say you could get lucky once. Everyone could get lucky once. Fewer people can get lucky twice. If he gets lucky twice, I think people are probably going to start taking him pretty seriously. And if he could do that a third time, then I would say he could establish himself as an expert. You just gotta make. Who said this? You gotta make three guesses consecutively correct, and then you could call yourself an expert.
If he can get that third time right, I'm gonna force him to create a YOLO ETF. Just a YOLO ETF. That's gonna be just the investment.
Yeah, Lawrence J. Peter. Make three correct guesses consecutively, and you will establish a reputation as an expert. Nice. That's what it takes. It's three. He's on step two. So he's got to make step two, turn 100K into a mil, and then do it once more, and he could officially be an expert.
Well, at this rate, I wouldn't be surprised if he actually does it. So I don't know. I want to see what it is, but then I don't want to complain and say, like, oh, you're bumping this coin.
I'm rooting for him because I really like his energy. He's a really positive guy. And I'd love to just see his witness this happening again. Who knows?
Witness greatness.
Greatness. The next Warren Buffett in the making. Let's see.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So Jeremy, to clarify, you said you didn't have any Bitcoin, or you said you registered to buy some? I kind of missed that part.
No, I never registered to buy, but I have some in my account because some people signed up for my Voyager affiliate link. So I have Bitcoin in my possession now.
Oh wow! Okay,
$80 to be exact. $80 to be exact.
Dang! So. At this rate, you're going to double it to 160 in a couple months. That's going to be crazy. Yeah. What are you going to do with all that money?
Oh, I don't know. Get internet, maybe? Something like that. I'm having trouble deciding. I'm just super nervous, guys. Two of my companies report tomorrow, and so I just needed some companionship. So that's why I'm over here, because Tattooed Chef's reporting after the bell tomorrow. And then Honest is also reporting, which is a stock I just started buying very recently. So I'm trying to get ready if Tattoo Chef goes down to 14. And I'm trying to get ready if Honest goes down to 7. So I'm just a little nervous. Can you guys talk me through it?
If TTCF goes down to 14, are you going to load up and buy more, or are you kind of done?
No, I got a half mil ready, baby. A half mil on the sideline. Yeah.
Gosh.
Just in case. Just
you
in case.
I can't put 20% of that in Bitcoin, but you can put another half million into TTCO.
Yeah. No problem.
Here's the thing. Tattooed Chef, it seems to zigzag between 14 and 22. And so far, it's done this like four or five times in a row, 14, 22, 14, 22. We'll see if it goes down to 14. You know, it seems to have a lot of support at that price.
Yeah, 16. Kevin's buying heavy, he said, if it goes down. Right, Kevin? You're going to load the boat, baby?
Look at Beyond Meat, man. That thing has gotten smoked. And I worry that might be a little bit of a leading indicator. I mean, I hope it goes up for you. But, you know, Beyond Meat, this is the other thing. I'm starting to see some of these support lines get crushed, and it's a problem. Look at, here, show it really quick. Look at, what do you got here? This is Beyond Meat. Look, we sat in this channel here. This channel is 121 to 143. And it always came back to this sort of 121, came back to 121. Even in May, when it dipped below to $100, it always came back. It's always rubber banding up and down and around this. You know, you get the euphoria and it comes back down. But look at it lately. It's just really just bleeding out of that range. And so I think this is almost kind of what you've been seeing, Jeremy, on some companies that you're talking about, like whether that's Owlet or Honest or whatever, where you do just have this loss of investor enthusiasm for certain companies, and you're just getting this straight trend down. So it's I don't know.
Yeah, with Beyond Meat, you know, you have to take these companies one by one. That's just a company that's just disappointed quarter after quarter, the actual fundamentals of the company. You know, every quarter it's like, well, restaurants aren't busy. And it's like, what are you talking about, man? Restaurants are packed. Like, you know, they always have an excuse. They haven't been growing, and they haven't been innovating at a fast enough rate to keep investors happy. So you can't really compare them in the chef, in my personal opinion. But
I mean, doesn't it speak to the frozen food aisle that, you know, maybe people are tired of that?
Well, just so you know, Beyond Meat's not a frozen food company.
Whatever. The home-cooked aisle. You know what home I mean? Cooked. Like,
Kevin, not everybody's got $42 million like you. They can't afford to eat out all the time. You realize the middle class getting killed right now, Kevin?
I don't eat out all the time. I have my food delivered.
Yeah, exactly. You big baller. No, man. Middle class is getting taken right now, man. Imagine you make $50,000 a year, okay? Yeah. Gas prices are way up. Your rent's gone through the roof. Everything you'd possibly buy is so much more expensive, and you probably make about the same or maybe just barely more than you used to make. And I'm hearing it on – I've listened to, oh, gosh, I don't know, maybe 10-plus conference calls so far this earnings season. And I'm hearing a lot of companies start to talk about this. And I think it's going to become a bigger subject around no stimulus. I've heard several companies mention that. There's no stimulus pump out there. And a lot of their consumers just are dealing with this inflation that's really hitting the middle class. And what that's going to do for spending on, especially if it's a non-need-based item – you know, I think this is going to be a bigger subject as time goes on, kind of like inflation. Remember, I think even on here, we talked about inflation really early. And then over the next few months, inflation became a big thing. And now, you know, inflation has been the talk of CNBC all for the past, I don't know, 4 or 6 months. I think this is going to be a bigger subject that people should pay attention to because, you know, I think this inflation is really hitting the middle class. I'll be completely honest.
I agree with you, Jeremy. I think, Kevin, I know you said that you expect inflation, I think, to go to cool off in July, but I'm not, I don't know. I don't think that that's going to be the case if I had to bet my money. I think the supply chain issues are still going to persist. And I think that labor shortage is still going to be a problem as a result of, you know, price increases because companies have to compete for people and pay them more and pass off those price increases to consumer goods and services. Some of the zip codes I'm looking at for rentals, like I have like two or three zip codes I look at in Vegas, there's like no inventory. There's nothing in the rental market. And of the ones that are, they're up like 30%. It's insane. But I don't know. I would bet my money on, I think we're still going to see a lot of inflation by July, which is going to be scarier because then we can't blame the Fed on anything. We can't be like, oh, it's the Fed printing money. It's going to be like, oh, the Fed lost control of inflation. And that's when the real narrative is going to start.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Look, I'm not going to put a time on when I think inflation is going to go down. I look at my core investments as, hey, what's going to make me the most money over the next 20, 30 years? In 20 or 30 years, I'm going to look back and I'm extremely confident, like 95% confident that at some point in this decade, we will be looking at a massive deflation in prices. I don't know if that's January or if it's July or if it's 2025 and it's my mom's birthday. I don't know, I don't care. It doesn't matter. But I'm investing as if at some point this is evaporating. It's going away. The temporary fears are going away. And we are going to have the most efficient, strongest country of corporations that we've ever seen before. The highest margins, the most productive workers, the most productive machinery, the most productive logistics systems. You do not short this market, because this market is planting the seeds for some big, big, big old tendies. But look, let me go back to what you said, Jeremy. This inflation crush on lower to middle class, even 50% or $50,000 a year at this point is relatively low, especially for a family of four. It's a big problem. And if anything, I actually think that's bullish. I hate to say it, but for buy now, pay later, because people are going to have to borrow more. Now, that's horrible for their personal finances. It's great for buy now, pay later and lending companies, as long as markets are good. If markets start turning, you start getting into a debt crisis. Well, this is going to be a big issue. But right now we don't have liquidity issues yet, at least not here in America. You know, Evergrande's got the problems. But the other thing to just mention to folks is, because I see this all the time, like on Reddit or in comments or whatever, people are like, I make $50,000. Somebody wrote on Reddit the other day, I make $50,000 a year in Florida, and all these rich people are coming in from New York and buying homes out here, and they're working remote, and I'm getting priced out. Well, this is where I hate to be blunt, but I'm going to be blunt and say it. Get off your ass and pick a different job. That's really harsh, but you're not going to make it. If you want to make it in the job that's paying you $50K in this kind of environment, when we do have inflation and it's very, very difficult to get by, you're probably going to have to move to like Ohio or something where the cost of living is way lower, and then you can live more well out there. But complaining and hoping for a market crash because things are expensive relative to your income when other people are getting jobs that pay more, that's not the market's problem to solve. That's your problem, your personal problem to solve. So don't bitch about it. Get up and do something about it.
Yeah.
Kevin, quick question.
When you agree with that. The job market is pretty good, it seems like. Sorry, Andre, go for it.
No, I was just going to ask, Kevin, when you say that there's going to be a deflation in the next 10 years, do you mean like consumer price index or assets?
Oh, yeah. So anytime I refer to inflation, deflation, just prices of things that we buy. So not assets, CPI. Not real estate, not stocks. That could happen, but that would come from a different reason. I'm more thinking, these MacBooks with the new M1 chips that everybody wants or whatever, right. This is going to cost a lot less in five years for the same computing power or the new computing power then, you know, instead of spending $1,400,
let me ask you this. Why would that cost less when they could just increase the quality of it and sell it for more, like with the iPhone? I'm sure it costs them less to produce, but now the company's making Apple's doing way more profit with per phone.
Yeah, but look, I mean, let's say the iPhone 1 was $800 and now you buy one of the new iPhones, the biggest one with the biggest storage for twice as much, for $1,600. Yeah. You're not getting 2x the quality. You're getting 10,000 times the quality for twice the price, right? So when we scale quality with price, the technology is extremely deflationary.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Does the state of money velocity scare you at all, Kevin?
Not where it is now, because it's been going down or been stable down. If that ticks up, we're screwed.
Well, that's why I was actually asking, if it concerns you either way, because right now it's so dang low that it's kind of like, well, if money's not changing hands, you know, I mean, you need to keep the ball rolling. You need people to spend, right? You know, this guy spends over here, this guy spends over here, then we go spend over here. You know, you need money moving around, and it's just not. I mean, it hasn't been moving for the most part. So I was just curious if you, but you're actually more scared if it upticks. That's interesting.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, if it upticks, then you have more inflationary pressures. You have money circulating more often for a limited supply of goods. With more demand, prices go up. So the velocity of money being down could be, and I mentioned this at the beginning of the pandemic. I don't know if I'm going to end up being right, but I predicted that the 2020s will be a frugal decade, where we have millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions, well, probably, of people who are more concerned about their personal finances, who are more concerned about investing and making sure that when 2020 rolls around, they don't get screwed. that they're ready to invest, that they're already invested, and they're trying to get out of debt. They're increasing their income. And look, you know, I ranted about people getting a higher paying job if things are getting pricey. Like, I'm not trying to offend anybody because, like, for example, I think it's a disgrace that, you know, cops, firefighters, teachers, these, you know, our heroes make 50K a year or whatever. But look, the reality is you're just not going to be able to make it in certain areas on that salary. And it's just that I feel like that sometimes that tough talk that's needed to make hopefully folks think like, okay, is there something I can do that's going to pay me more money in the future?
Wow. Yeah. So I want to come back to that. But first, I just want to say thank you to everybody that ever supports our channel, the members only chat, everybody that smashes a thumbs up button. We appreciate you guys. Thanks for being subscribed. We love you. But Kevin, I mean, I don't know, man. This money velocity thing is freaking me out because I was looking at the chart the other night. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, it's so out of control low. And is it going to, do you think it's going to stay like that? Are you predicting that it's really going to stay that low? You know, because I'm just trying to figure out, like, where are we going here? And Graham and Andre, if you got any thoughts on this, jump in too.
I have no idea where it's going to go. I think just based on if I was going to throw a guess out there, you know, again, frugal decade, people were potentially, maybe people will invest a little more and save a little bit more and spend a little less, even though we have more money. So net spending is up. We have all this extra money potentially because of stimulus and all this. Remember that when you put money into a savings account or a stock, the velocity of money is like 1.4. It's dead low. You go spend it on a computer, it's like 5 or 6. It's extremely high. So more people investing, which is what we've seen, does correlate with a lower velocity of money.
The tough thing is that it makes sense. Like, people don't want to spend because they see the market going up so much. And they're thinking, why would I spend money on that Apple computer when I could invest it and the market's going to bring me another 5% a week?
Kevin, Andre, Graham, you really think the masses are thinking that?
I think enough people out there, especially the fact that I think it was like Fidelity said they got, I forget how many millions of new users that they got under the age of 35. Yep. It was enough that they wanted to redirect a substantial portion of their business to attract a millennial audience because they're investing and they're saving their money. And I think the more the market goes up, the more people are tempted to want to participate. That's what I think.
No, that was just all the people in my private stock group that graduated from Robinhood to Fidelity. But Kevin, do you mind pulling up that chart if you can, please, from the St. Louis Fed or whatever? Because I don't think a lot of people have ever seen that or know what we're talking about. And it just shows over the last 5-10 years, you know, money velocity. So, Andre, you got any thoughts on this?
No, I tend to agree with the general sentiment, but as far as like numbers wise and its effect on the general rate of inflation, I don't know. So yeah, that's the velocity of money right there. You could see it's like,
look at that.
Wow, look at that. That's insane. It's like non-existent. So people are socking away money. I could see that. Wow.
Yeah, and look at how it was so consistent for, you know, a decade or two. And then just, you know, very, very recently, it's really gone off the, you know.
This year is 1963. That's crazy.
Yeah, so you can see we usually trend around 1.6 to 2 very consistently, right?
Yeah.
And then we have the dot-com bubble right there.
And then right about there, interest rates just plummeted. I'm wondering how much of that is correlated to low interest rates.
Same here. Yeah.
Right here.
The recessions are driving this down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it never comes back up.
Right.
With the exception of here.
Yeah, we could also look at the personal savings rate. I'm not sure if you could pull that up. If that, what sort of correlation that has with that?
That dropped substantially from the pandemic highs. Did you guys see that?
Yeah, the pandemic high, I think, was 20%. And now, but it's still, I believe it's still significantly higher than what it was back then. I think it was like 13 to 20%. And then it's down to like 6 or 7, which is still historically pretty high. So people are saving more money.
Right.
I don't know. You going to pull something up here, Kevin?
Sure.
Okay.
There we
personal
go.
Personal savings rates.
Okay. Personal savings rates. I see it's come up.
It's come down a lot. Yeah.
Does it go back further than that? Can we go back and like do the max? Yeah, right there. Let's see. All right, so it's still higher than 2005.
No. Yeah.
Yeah, here's but it's here's 05. The wrong way.
Dang.
Whoa. Look at
That's what everyone in buying houses.
Yeah, in 05. 2.1% personal savings rate. Wow.
That's paycheck to paycheck right there.
It is. Listen, Jeremy, if you're talking about the middle class not saving, I mean, this is historically, yeah, they're saving almost three times as much money today as they were throughout the 2000s.
Yeah, but my concern here is look at how fast it's dropping. Where's it at now? That's looking at September. Where did it drop in October? Where's it going to be at November?
But this is stimulus. This is pure stimulus. Look at this.
Yep.
April stimulus check. January, that was the December stimulus check. And then Biden gets in, right? We get the February stimulus package, which you got the money in March.
Yeah, so I think we're still too volatile to say where it'll settle. Because if you look at even 2011, 2000, 10 years ago, it's about the same rate, 2011-ish. Keep going further. Yeah.
There Six we go. And a half, seven, eight. Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know. I would say we're kind of settling to the average. We're not particularly more. I wouldn't say that.
I wonder what happened. I still think
2012. Oh yeah, December 2012. Gosh, what
that happened? Wasn't like no cash for clunkers was way earlier. This was rates started going up like crazy over here in March of 2013.
Hmm. So hold on. When interest rates are going lower. What's the correlation here to personal savings rate?
I don't know that we could say.
I don't think there is one.
Okay.
And this is why I truly think the most important thing to watch over the next 6 to 12 months is the middle class and keep an eye on these sorts of things, because it looks to me like people are blowing through the savings. I would assume right now today, if we were to get a live chart of that, which we can't, I would assume it's probably quite a bit lower, and the middle class is getting squeezed by inflation, and the middle class at the end of the day is really what drives or doesn't drive this economy and company earnings. And so I don't know. I think it's going to be, I don't know what happened to Graham.
Graham's like, middle class? I'm out.
I don't want any part of the middle class. I'm leaving.
And not relate. No.
But anywho, yeah, that so to me, I think that's the most important thing to pay attention to over the next 6 to 12 months is the middle class and the state of the middle class.
Jeremy, how much do you think this whole meme economy plays into this whole thing? Because do you think that with just how much that's been publicized, people are investing a lot more? And do you think like it could continue or are we in a new paradigm, or do you think that's going to end and then we're going to kind of revert back to the meme?
I think whenever you're in a bull market, and obviously stocks and crypto have been in quite a bull market since basically March of 2020, right? I think that just you like take on more and more risk. I think about when I got started in the stock market. Graham's back. I think about when I got started in the stock market in like, you know, it was like, you know, 2008, 2009. It was a really, really, everybody was so scared. People didn't even want to think about investing, right? So I was kind of brainwashed early on to invest in safer stocks. So a lot of my early stocks were like Walmart, Kimberly-Clark, Conagra Foods, like very, very boring stocks, but that was the play, right? And so right now, if you've made a ton of money, it's like take the most risk possible. Put that 100K in whatever's the most speculative crypto. As soon as people really, really get hurt, that's when everybody kind of wakes up and they're like, oh man, yeah, I don't know about this, right? But it takes pain to get to that place where you kind of find a fine balance there. So that's my opinion. But yeah, there's no doubt there's more people investing than ever.
Yeah, and that kind of correlates. The savings rate that Kevin was showing us is correlating with recessions, right? So the crazier the economy, the more of a worse recession we're in, the higher the savings rate generally tends to be. And vice versa.
Exactly. And you got to get hurt, you know, it's like Kevin can speak to this when you got kids, right? You know, your kids sometimes don't want to listen to you and you're like, don't do that. You're going to get hurt. And then it takes them to actually get hurt before they're like, you know, oh, maybe I shouldn't do that again. Right. And I feel like that's going to be a lot of investors. They got to get hurt and bad.
You cannot tell them. You cannot tell them. I told you so. But look at this. This yeah, it's not loading. That. That's weird. This can you guys see the comment? It's not loading for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, now I can see it.
Okay. Yep. People are investing as an act of desperation to increase earnings. I think there's some truth to this, that there's a lot of this meme YOLOing momentum that is literally just people like, that's it. I'm taking my last 3K. I'm hoping I can 10X it so I can, pay off. Oh, sorry. So I can pay off my debt or whatever, like start my business or something. I think it's horrible, a horrible idea. But what do you guys think?
I think it's a great idea, depending on the situation you're in, right? If you have such a, I don't know, if you're not making anything and it's like your moonshot, then I could see how, as an act of desperation, that's why Pro did what he did. That's why he borrowed everything he could. He maxed out his credit cards. He shot his shot and he, I don't know, became a millionaire. Is that smart? No. But I could see how some people feel like there's no other way for them to get ahead in life. And I think that whole philosophy is kind of, I don't know, strengthened by who said this? I forget who said this. It's like no rich person ever got wealthy by being diversified. So it's like you take a crazy risk and there's a bigger reward. So I could see how we've come to this point. But on the flip side, I could see how it's terrible. And I agree with Jeremy that when this game ends, and I don't know when it's going to end or what's going to cause it to end, a lot of people are going to get hurt, especially in crypto. So.
Wow. What do you think, Graham?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, but here's the thing. I think people are beginning to smarten up and realize that investing is good for the long term. It's smart to invest your money. And I think, as unpopular as it is to say, I do think Robinhood has done a lot of good getting people through the door. And I think offering a free platform that makes it very easy. And I remember when Robinhood first came out, like 2000, I think it was 16 or 17. That's when it started to gain momentum. A lot of people were interested in it because it was like free from your phone. And I think that aspect to it, and even the fact that it was gamified a little bit. But that's what people who are like in their early 20s needed. They needed that. So I just think it's becoming more popular. The more people are in it, the more they're going to tell their friends about it, the more that they're going to talk about investing together. And then it becomes like this fun activity where you're with your buddies. Be like, oh, what did you buy this week? Oh, I bought more Tesla. Oh, I got a Tesla call option expire. Oh, when's your expire? Mine's expired. I think it's becoming more of like a fun community aspect that just didn't exist a while ago, and now we're starting to see that.
Yeah, I think it, and I think it's not so much the people that maybe are investing like $500. I don't think it's those that will get hurt the worst. I think it's the people that are getting greedy, let's put it that way, right? That they're already have substantial amounts of money and they want to get to even bigger amounts. Maybe they got a half mil and now all of a sudden they want to get to 5 mil as fast as possible. I think it's be those people, kind of no different than the real estate boom. The ones that got hurt the worst were the people that were buying up 4, 7, 8, 10 houses on spec, right? And so I don't know, I think that will actually be the ones that get hurt the worst, the greediest ones of the bunch. So
can you define on spec for folks?
Well, on spec, just meaning, maybe you're relying to get those loans, right? Or just completely speculating about it. I know that's a popular term in the real estate industry. When you build a home and you don't have a buyer for it, you're just hoping or you think you're going to be able to sell it for a certain price. I know that was a popular thing in L.A. It still is a popular thing in L.A., right, Graham? Building a home on spec. You don't have a buyer already, so.
Oh yeah, I would say a lot of the new constructions are spec houses, almost all of them.
Yeah, and do you have a percentage of what deals you think make good money in that market? Like, do they usually make good money most of the time?
Oh okay. Yeah, though I would say in almost every single situation, unless the seller's like overspending on everything and has no idea what they're doing, they're pretty smart, and unless the market goes down, most of them are making good money. The spec homes that I see are usually the ones where the owner is like specking it out, but they're really doing it for themselves. And then they finish the project and there are so many just obscure, weird things in the home. I don't want to call it out, but there was like a home that was built. But it was in the valley in Los Angeles, and it's in a neighborhood of just regular houses, like normal 3-4 bedroom houses, 1500 to 1800 square in a normal neighborhood. And right in the middle of the neighborhood, there's like a 15,000 square foot mansion on the corner that takes up like 7 lots, and it looks like a castle in the middle of, and the owner built it to sell it. And this was, I think, in like 2006 or something. The market just crashed. But this dude not only built a home that was so unique to the area, but he also built it for himself secretly. I mean, it was just a disaster. The home is horrible for the neighborhood. Absolutely horrible. So those are the ones that lose money. But I'd say most that do it smartly in line with the area, you're going to do well, as long as the market doesn't take a dump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As long as the market doesn't take a dump, that's a good way to put it.
I feel like that's always what we say. Oh yeah, this company should do well as long as the market doesn't take a dump.
I'm gonna be right unless I'm wrong.
Basically,
you're guaranteed to make money unless you're not. So
unless you don't.
Unless you don't. But there's a good chance you will. Who knows? Maybe.
On real estate, do we just do a quick thing on maybe is the real estate market going to crash, and then is there anything else to talk about? We kind of talked a little bit.
I want to get your thoughts, Kevin. I think you should give your recap about what you think is going to, what your prediction is for the market for the rest of the year. You've talked about an end of year rally basically the entire year. You've mentioned end of year rally. We're seeing something pretty close to that, but now we're seeing things drop. Now earnings are coming out and they're good, and they're stocks are just falling.
Yeah.
So do you think we've hit a peak where now people are like, all right, it's towards the end of the year. Maybe I should start taking some profits. Things are a little frothy. And maybe now, unless companies are beating by a large margin, they're like, all right, what's there to look forward to? Let me just sell.
Maybe, you know, who knows? But my investment thesis was load up on options in April and May, and sell them profitably when there's an end of the year rally. I've gone from like $5 million in options to one. And so I've dumped a crap load of options, which is great because I've sold most of those very profitably, which has been fantastic. How long the rally lasts, I have no idea. I think a lot of this recent drama that we're seeing in the last couple of days is spawned in part by the Fed. You know, the Fed came out, their financial stability report really calls into question the valuations that we're seeing. And you look at some of these stocks, the returns have been insane. Some of them, not all of them, right? But enough of them that, I think you're right. Maybe some people will take some profits, but I'm still happy for the rest of the year. I'm bullish and optimistic, I think, is the better phrase than happy, mostly because I think we don't have that many fear catalysts. I think that we could see some pain over the next 2 to 3 days as we wait for Joe Biden to make an announcement on the Fed chairperson. If he picks Jay Powell, I think we're going to see a very green day the next day. We'll see.
But if he picks Janet, that might be a different story. If he picks Janet Yellen.
No, Janet Yellen. She had her turn.
I'm pretty sure Powell's the pick. I mean, it would be a surprise to the market if he went against Powell, would it not?
Huge. Yeah.
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 It would be a surprise to me.
Mm. I don't know. I hope he goes for Janet. That way Bitcoin could just 10x in one day. I'm just kidding. Let's not do that. I don't want that.
I don't know. If he sticks with Jerome Powell, the market knows what it's going to get. But also, if he goes with Yellen, the market could also look
Yellen,
back. At
Yellen is not policy. A choice here. It's
who mentioned it's, Yellen? I'm just going along with it.
He's screwing around.
Oh.
It's I don't know how to say your name really well. It's like
Lyle
Brainard or something like that. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. So Yellen, she's a centrist. The thing about her though is she doesn't talk that much, so she could go either way. She could swing either way, man. We just don't know.
Whoa, good.
What are you implying, Kevin?
I'm saying she could raise rates or not.
What sort of rates is she raising? sounds like there's some inflation there, Kevin.
Inflation has many meanings.
You have a lot of interest in this.
That's like the most dad joke podcast ever.
Uh-huh. Kevin's that, thinking he's going to give edgy. That the other stimulus. All right, maybe we should stop. We'll stop.
So we open up questions. Hey, Andre, Kevin, you guys loading up on the chef if it goes down on earnings, or what's going on here?
Is it $14?
Yeah, if it hits 14, would you buy? What about 15? Could I sell you a 15? 16?
What's that now? You know, 17? Lately,
for me, it's been coming down to the earnings calls. So I would prefer to answer that after I read their call transcript, because the calls. Well,
I'll tell you their call. I already know it. 50% plus revenue growth. They're getting into more and more retailers, more and more SKU expansion in stores, getting into more and more stores, every store you possibly could think of. That's their call. So that'll be the gist of it. They'll have some cost pressures. They're going to have not the greatest margins in the world, but they'll have margin expansion next year. There you go. That's the whole conference call, Kevin. You don't even need to listen now, okay?
Well, I definitely won't listen. I'll read it.
you read it, Kevin? I like to listen. Really, you read conference calls, huh?
No, because if I read it, I could sit there and make notes, and I can draw like question marks and stuff, and I can go at my pace rather than waiting for the stupid music and all this bull crap. I don't have time for that.
Well, Kevin. So, okay, I was going to tell you, if you download the Hungry Bull app, you can put it at 2x speed. How does that sound? 2x speed earnings calls.
The best feature you got in that app, right there. I really like that.
We gotta have something, man. We'll just take that.
That's very, very good feature. Just honestly, just change the name to the earnings call app, and you'll connect. You know, carve that part out and sell that as a standalone app.
Okay, I'll sell it to you, Kevin.
Oh, thank you. So go ahead.
Yeah, you like to read the conference calls, and you like to make notes when you're doing it, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And I just pulled up. Let's see what I'm pulling up their projections really quick. Let's see what the Wall Street consensus is for tomorrow. So if somebody wants to play the game tomorrow for Tattooed Chef, you want to have these numbers written down. They're expecting $63.95 million of revenue. They're expecting a net income of -4.35, and that would be an adjusted EPS of about a loss of 5.5 cents. So. One thing that that is interesting is their implied one day move tomorrow is 10.2%. That is more than twice the average move after earnings. The average move after earnings is 4.71%. You've only got two analysts covering it right now, one at a buy and one at a hold on it. I hope it does well for you.
Well, it doesn't matter. I hope it goes down. I want to buy more shares. So I hope it doesn't go down. I hope it goes down.
What were you looking at for that data? Is that the what was that app you were showing me? The one you pay like a ridiculous amount a month for?
Yeah, that? The Bloomberg Terminal.
Yeah, that's right.
Kevin, it frustrates me how few analysts cover the stock. It's ridiculous. I mean, this is building out to a multi-hundred million dollar revenue company. To two analysts to cover it, it's on a major.
Are you counting Jeremy as both of those, like his two channels?
Channel one and channel two.
One says hold, the other says buy.
Strong buy.
And Jeremy, you know, the forecast is that margin gross profit is expected to go from 18.3 to 22% next year. That's great. Hopefully the biggest concern. Now I remember the biggest concern I have for this company is not so much the gross profit margin, which is really going to be the cost of foods. Inflation pressures are going to wear that down. I agree with you. The biggest one for me is actually going to be EBITDA margin, because that's where you're going to see the advertising expense. So what I would do, the probably the biggest metric that I would look at tomorrow in that earnings statement is I would want to see how much did our revenue go up quarter to quarter, and how much did we have to spend on advertising to get that, and what was the advertising growth percentage? If they doubled their advertising spend and they quadrupled their revenue, then that's phenomenal, right? So just as an example, that's what I'd be looking for, probably.
Interesting. So you're the advertising line is actually what you're going to be most interested in Interesting. Yes. Okay. Wow. Yeah. And they've hardly ever spent. So the percentage you'll see advertising go up will probably be substantial because they haven't really spent any money. But so I think it would be more important to look at the dollar amount rather than the percentage amount. I mean, because
the only reason I mentioned percentage is I don't really care about compare it. Like the revenue is supposed to be exploding as well, right? So all of the numbers are relatively small right now. I would just want to compare those two. So the percentage growth of revenue to percentage growth of advertising. Because the thing about, in my opinion, the food biz is when you advertise, you're kind of hoping to realize those conversions within the next few weeks. You know, obviously, you hope to build a loyal customer for the long term to where you don't have to advertise to keep attracting them. But the problem with the food industry is you literally have to convince these people every freaking time they order food to get Tattoo Chef. That's hard. And so advertising is to some degree necessary.
Yeah, I feel like, man, personally, I feel like there's a lot of wasted money in the advertising industry when it comes to food and drink. Like, you don't need to sell me to buy another Pepsi Max or Coke Zero. Like, I'm going to drink one of those, two of those every day, no matter what. Like, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, you don't need to spend any money to get me, right? So, you know, In-N-Out, well, In-N-Out is a bad example, but, you know, if I feel like Chick-fil-A doesn't have to run an ad to get me to go buy some chicken nuggets at Chick-fil-A. So I don't know. I feel like there's a lot. I feel like that's one of the industries where they waste a lot of money. But to get a new customer, if they're that loyal customer that's going to spend hundreds of dollars with you year in and year out, or thousands, which would be a big number, right?
Jeremy, why is the EPS expected negative? What did they do?
They're like, this is a huge growth company. So essentially, I mean, you're advertising, obviously. When you're scaling a business, like, you have all these, you know, new employees, new costs to the business, and things like that you just can't account for, right? Or you just, you know, you're not ready to focus around profitability. So as a company gets more mature, and there'll be a day when Tattoo Chef only grows 5% revenues or 10% revenues, that's when it becomes profitability. And if you built a successful food business, those businesses are incredibly profitable, right? And so right now it's all about revenue growth, except for Kevin. He's focused on the advertising, which I don't think is a bad idea either. I think that's
what's a golden standard in the food industry as far as, like, from a stock perspective.
I mean, you
Tyson.
Probably look
at, dude, yeah, Tyson. Look at Tyson's stock this year. Ripped. Mm-hmm. So good. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. Tyson, Unilever, they have some food business, but they have some other businesses. You obviously have, what's the huge one? They're actually a chocolate bar business. The chocolate.
Oh, company. Hershey's. Oh,
Hershey's is a beast, but no, it's a bigger one.
Mondelez.
Mondelez, there we go. Mondelez, yeah.
Two for two, let's go.
You just gotta get one more, Kevin, and you're an expert.
I will say the drink industry is better than the food industry. The amount of giants in that industry is crazy. You know, you look at Coca-Cola, you look at Pepsi, which Pepsi has a food business, a snack business as well, right? Anywho, and then you got Monster, you got Red Bull. I mean, you got so many companies in the drink space that have tens of billions or hundreds of billions of dollar market cap. It's incredible. So, Graham, we want to hear what you buying this past week. You got any?
What did I buy? Ethereum, Bitcoin, Ethereum this weekend. So, like, Saturday, Sunday, I was buying, I think I bought 3 or 4 Ethereum. Wow. I always buy just a fraction of Bitcoin. But let's see if we go through, what did I buy? S&P, really the S&P, and then I bought Canopy Growth, believe it or not, at 1165, because I saw a huge dip, and I was like, listen, at this price, I may as well. I bought in higher than that a while ago, and I was like, may as well. So, and then more Alibaba in the 150s.
Oh,
that was on Friday. So what is this, Tuesday? So I guess, yeah. And then just really S&P 500.
Interesting. Yeah, I was going to say, man, you buy every stock that's dipping right now, you're going to be out of money quick with how many of these stocks are dipping 20%.
True.
Oh, gosh. So, Graham, you want to take us home?
Yes, guys. So, really quick, make sure to subscribe if you're watching this right now. Now is your sign. This is the time. This is the best time there's ever been to subscribe, because it's totally free to do. Costs you nothing, and you get to see us live once a week. Also, make sure to destroy the like button for the YouTube algorithm. Helps out a lot. We also, oh, we got the Clips channel down below in the description. If you ever miss an episode, you just want to see the clips, don't miss an episode, but also subscribe to the Clips channel. Thank you guys so much for watching. Oh, the link to that is in the description. That's it. Like, subscribe, Clips channel. That's it. Thank you guys so much for watching, and until next time.
Hopefully this is the last time you'll hear this ad. Because with Chime checking account features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe, and getting paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit, you can probably treat yourself to an ad-free upgrade to spend more time listening to your favorite podcasts, or at least grab yourself an extra morning latte this month. Join millions of Chime members who work on their financial progress with fee-free overdraft and no monthly fees. When you find new ways to save, you can reach your financial goals easier and still have the occasional treat. Take more control of your finances and say goodbye to monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/goals24. That's chime.com/goals24. Chime. Feels like progress. Banking services and debit card provided by Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.